Good morning. Today's daf is daf Chaf Gimel, page 23. We were on Chaf Beis, Amud Beis, just to review a little bit to get us back into the flow of the discussion. The Gemara is in the midst of the very famous dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, how to understand the law that one is responsible for the damage of his fire. Is it, as Reish Lakish argues, that fire is viewed by halacha and treated by halacha as property, almost as if it's an ox and it's treated like an ox? Or the way we understand fire is that fire is a person's own force. Just as a person might take a rock and throw it, he's propelling a rock, he's responsible because the rock is powered by his force, it's his action. Where there's no law of tsroros in a person. Tsroros is about an animal's force, but a person's force is like a person's body. When a person lights a fire and the fire spreads, it's a person's own force. So the Gemara had ended yesterday with quoting the Mishnah, where the Mishnah taught that if somebody gives his fire to an imbecile or to a child, and then the child moves the fire around, he's exempt in the laws of man, but obligated in the laws of God. The laws of heaven he should pay. So Gemara said, that makes sense according to Rabbi Yochanan, that fire is viewed as an extension of a person's actions. So he handed a fire to the child, but now it's the child's actions. The children are not responsible for their actions. But according to Reish Lakish, that fire is property. Why is he exempt? Because he gave it to a child. If a person gives an ox to a child, would he be exempt? The Gemara says, well, according to Reish Lakish, we're talking about a case where he didn't actually hand to the child the fire. He handed to the child a coal that was going out, and the child turned it into a fire. But according to Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, you're right, it's the actions of the child. So even if he gave the child the flame, if the child then spread it, it's the child's actions. When would Rabbi Yochanan say that when he gives it to the child, he would be responsible even in the laws of man? If what he did was literally spread it, the child just happens to be standing there. He gives a child a flame, twigs, and thorns, you know, things to literally spread it, and the child lets it spread, so then he's responsible. But if he gives the child a flame, and the child moves the flame around, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's now the actions of the child. The actions of the child, he would not be responsible for under the laws of man. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Rava taught, we're four lines from the bottom. We have a verse, plus we have a brisa, both in support of Rabbi Yochanan, that fire is considered human action. It's the person's force. Kra, the following verse, the pasuk says, Ki seitze eish, umatza kotzim, if a fire will go out and find thorns, Shalem yishalemi, he must surely pay. Amav iris habeira, the one who is lighting this conflagration. So once it says, ki teitze eish, and a fire will go out, teitze me'atzma, it sounds like it's going out on its own. He has a fire and it spreads. And then it says, yishalem amav iris habeira, the one who's lighting the conflagration should pay. The one who is doing the very lighting. So what do you mean? It went out on its own. He's not doing the lighting, but you see that when it goes out on its own, it's as if he did the lighting. Because when a fire spreads, it's his action, it's his force. That's a proof that fire is a person's arrows. We're on the last line of Beis Amid Beis. It's a support to Rabbi Yochanan. And Masnisa, we have a Braisa also supporting Rabbi Yochanan. The Tanya, we lived in a Braisa. Look at that verse. The verse says, Ki seitzei eish, when a fire will go out. Pasach min iskei mimono. It says, when a fire will go out on its own. That sounds like an ox getting out on its own. It sounds, the terminology and the setting is like that of damage of property. And then it says, Shalem yishalem ha-maviris ha-beira. The one who's lighting should pay. It talks about he himself, b'nizke gufo. The verse then switches to talk about damage of his own body. So the Braisa says that this meaning of the verse is to tell you, Eishem Yishem Chitzav, a person's fire is based on a person's arrows. Right on its own.
Like,
yeah, it's spreading on its own.
Like I say, spreading.
Yeah, it goes, it was in your house, and then it spread from your domain to the next domain on its own.
It was not bleeding blood.
Right.
Okay. So you're not responsible for that.
You are responsible, sure.
If it started from and go to the next door.
And the meaning of your responsibility that it's your action. You spread it.
Even though it happened by naturally, you know.
Yes, but you should have anticipated the wind, and the wind is your action. Amar Rava, Rava said, Kasha Leila Abaya, Abaya had the following problem. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that the way we categorize the damager of fire is that fire is really a form of a person who damages. So now, Taman Beish Kepater Rachman Eichem Mishkach Asla. We know that every one of the damagers has its own unique characteristic. So Karen initially only pays half damage. It even pays in the public domain. Regel is exempt in the public domain. Fire, the unique characteristic of fire is that there's no obligation for things hidden. Let's say I lit a fire. It goes into my friend's field. It burns down his haystack. But in his haystack, he had hidden his wallet. He had hidden $1,000. I don't have to pay those $1,000. I have to pay for the hay. It's a special pasuk to exempt a person for paying for tumen, for that which is hidden in a pile. So I understand, if fire is a form of a person who's damaging, it's like arrows. A person who shoots an arrow, he has to pay for the damage that the arrow causes, even if it damaged an item that was hidden. So too, the fire should have to pay, the owner of the fire should have to pay, even if his fire damages something which is hidden. That was the question of Abai. Venichles, he was able to resolve it with the following. You know when the fire would have to, when the owner of the fire would have to pay for, would be exempt, I'm sorry, for that which is hidden? When the fire is no longer his arrows. When would that happen? He lit a fire, it spread into his friend's courtyard. But that courtyard had walls around it. So he figured the fire is contained. And it was contained. But then, the wall around the courtyard collapsed. Not because of the fire, not because of the heat. On its own, it suddenly collapsed. And then the fire spreads to another courtyard and it burns things there. It's burning in a second courtyard. Hasam, in such a scenario, it's no longer his arrows. His arrows is where the fire was anticipated to go to. But where the fire was not anticipated to go to, and suddenly it gets to there too, that's already not his arrows. His action was finished. And therefore, at that point, it's not his action. Then already you have the law that he would be exempt for that which is hidden. So I don't understand. If he doesn't anticipate it to get to there, and it's not his action anymore, even that which is uncovered, he should be exempt for. You say that explains why he'd be exempt for that which is hidden. It should already say he's not obligated for that which is uncovered either. Because once it's no longer his action, so then he's no longer responsible for it. So now the Gemara introduces the key point. Ella, apparently, Leman Dislim Ishim Chitzam, even Rabbi Yochanan, who says that the obligation of fire is that fire is viewed as the arrows of the one who lit the fire, Isle Nami Mishim Mimono, he agrees that fire is also property. And you're responsible for fire because it's as if your ox went out and damaged. He has two reasons to obligate you when fire goes out. One, fire is your property. And two, fire is your action. It's you, it's your stone, it's your ox, but it's also you throwing your ox. It's both things. It's both. Fire is your property and fire is your action. And therefore, right. So generally when a fire damages, you're obligated based on two reasons, both as property and as action. And now in this case, you lit a fire, the fire got into an area. Now you should have anticipated it would get to that area, but that area was enclosed with a wall. So since it's enclosed in a wall, right, that's as much as you should anticipate it should get to. Now the wall falls, not because of the fire. So now it's not a situation of your actions anymore. But once the wall fell, Kagon Shayolo Lagodra, he had enough time to put a new wall up. He had time to put a new wall up. After it fell. And he chose not to go put it up. And he let it spread. So that's like Kasam Shoru. That's like when you have an ox that gets out of your stable and you have time to go tackle the ox and you choose not to tackle your ox. At that point, you're responsible for what your ox does. Velo tafach ba'ap, and you don't stop your ox. And therefore, now you're responsible for fire as property. Fire as property has its special law that you're only responsible for that which is uncovered. You're not responsible for the damaged item that was hidden.
Rabbi,
yeah.
Does it matter if the fence fell before the fire or during the fire or after the fire?
Very much so, right? If it would have fallen before the fire and your fire is spreading, you know the fire is going to go further. So now we wouldn't say that your actions ended. We'd say it's the whole way it's your actions.
So they want you to fix the fence or the wall
while
the fire is going on?
Yeah, when you have the time to do it and you have the ability to do it. Apparently it wasn't too unsafe to do it.
It has to be done way before the fire happened.
No, maybe it's not such a big fire. You can put the wall back up.
Has to be before,
but you didn't
do
it.
It's like a brush fire. Maybe.
It's a little fire. He didn't go to fix it. So the Gemara now asks,
when you come to my house, bring your fire engine with you.
The Chimeacher demand Islam Mishum Chitzav. Now that we've gotten to this amazing conclusion, that even Rabbi Yochanan, who says fire is a person's arrows, Islam Nami Mishum Emono, he also believes that fire is a person's property, and fire is a person's ox that he's not watching. So my Beinayu, what's the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish? They both agree that fire has the laws of property, and it has the and it could have the law of. What's the difference between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish? So I'll tell you what the difference is. Ika Beinayu l'chayvu b'arba dvarim. Would you have to pay the added penalties in a case of fire? Let's remember, when a person damages another person, he doesn't just pay for damage. He also pays for humiliation. He also pays for the doctor bills. He also pays for the lost wages. He also pays for the for all sorts of other things. He pays five penalties. He pays nezek, the damage, the tsar, the pain, the ripui, the doctor bills, the sheves, the lost wages, uboshes, and the humiliation. Now, humiliation he only pays when he intended to humiliate. So, okay, a guy who lights a fire wouldn't have to pay humiliation payments. But if the fire burned a person, he should pay four payments because it's really his actions. It's his arrow. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, not only does he pay for nezek, for the damage, he also pays for tsar, he pays for the pain, he pays for ribur, he pays for the doctor bills, and for the sheves, the lost wages. Whereas if my ox goes out and damages a person, I pay nezek, I pay damages. I don't pay for ribur, I don't pay for the doctor bills, I don't pay for sheves, I don't pay for the lost wages, I don't pay for tsar, I don't pay for the pain. So that's the difference. According to Rish Lakish, you don't have the added payments. According to Rabbi Yochanan, that fire is human action. When a fire damages another person, you'd have to pay four payments and not just one payment.
There's a problem here. When they send the chetz,
yeah,
the chetim, we say the conclusion yesterday that the area that the chetz fell,
mm-hmm,
this is the nezek. I don't care if that's the...
That was according to Rish Lakish.
Rish Lakish, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're explaining Rabbi Yochanan. We're saying Rabbi Yochanan would be different from Rish Lakish, and that according to Rabbi Yochanan, for the fire you pay for the added damages.
So Rosh Lakish continue with his...
he says it's property.
I don't want to pay marpeh, I don't want to pay this.
You don't pay those things. According to Rosh Lakish, you don't pay those things. It's like an ox that damages. That's, you don't have to pay for those added, just the damage. Now, how did we get into this whole discussion? Because of the Mishnah's very fascinating case. My dog goes into someone else's field, grabs his piece of toast, eats the toast, and sets off a fire. So the Mishnah says, for the toast you pay full damage, for the fire half damage. Why are you paying half damage for the fire? So that's how we got into Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish. According to Rabbi Yochanan, we understand, because fire is a person's force, so it's the force of the animal, so it's kocho. So it pays half damage because of tsroros. So according to Rish Lakish, we said you have to be saying the case of the Mishnah is where he ate the piece of toast and he threw it. So by throwing the toast, that's literally kochel, that's his force. So and when it says you pay half, it only means on the exact location where it landed. There it pays half. Once it spreads further, he's exempt entirely because there's no such thing as property of a dog. So going back to the Mishnah. Again, the Mishnah says for the toast, full damage, for the fire, half damage. So the Gemara asks, Man Chayev, who's the one who has to pay? Baal Kelev, the owner of the dog. So now it gets to Roger's question. Roger asks, I don't understand, but the fire belonged to somebody else. The fire belonged to the owner of the toast. So the Gemara asks, L'chayev nami baal gacheles, let the owner of the piece of toast, the owner of the coal, also be obligated. So the Gemara answers, B'shashimer gechalasa. He watched his coal. So he's exempt, because he did what he's supposed to do. If he kept his coal, he watched it. So then, my boy Kelevasim, how'd the dog get there and get it? Bishachata. He watched the coal. He put a little wall around the piece of toast. And the dog dug underneath the wall. Dug underneath the wall, and he got the toast. You see that apparently the owner of the dog has to realize that if he has a dog, he has to expect that his dog is going to slide under walls in order to get to things, and it's not considered mishuna, it's not keren, rather it's shein, it's normal, and therefore he's responsible for what his dog did.
In this case, we're dealing with three parts. Right?
Yeah. Right. So now the Gemara gets into the following interesting question. Where did the dog eat this piece of toast? Because we know Shane is only obligated in the domain of the one damaged. It's not obligated in the domain of the damager. So if you're going to say it ate the toast in a hay pile that doesn't belong to the owner of the toast, I hope it eaten of your bizday achav elekla. The only time you're obligated for tooth is when the tooth damages in the domain of the one who was damaged. If it's in a pile of hay that doesn't belong to the one damaged, it's in some other area. So the answer is, it ate the piece of toast next to the hay that also belongs to the owner of the toast. So it's in the field of that guy. So it's two people. It's the guy who owns the hay, he also owns the toast. And on the other hand, there's the dog going in and eating. So now the Gemara has a very strange idea, which the Gemara discusses for a while. How do we define the domain of the one damaged? Again, the pasuk says, the shilach es b'iro uvi'er b'sdei acher. He'll send his consumer, it'll consume in the field of others. So we said if it consumes in the field of the public, then you don't pay. It only pay for consuming in the field of the one damaged. So my ox goes into Gavriel's house and it eats in his backyard. Can you really say that my ox was in the domain of the damaged? The damage happens in the mouth of the ox, and the ox belongs to me. So maybe the damage is in the domain of the damager because it's in the mouth of the ox. So maybe we say, we don't care about the mouth. You look at where the whole animal is. The animal is in his courtyard, so it's in the domain of the damaged. So that's the Gemara's discussion now. The Gemara says, Tifsha, let's prove from our Mishnah to Pipara that the mouth of the cow, Kachatzer Anizak Dami, doesn't make it the domain of the damager. It's still the domain of the one damaged, even though the actual damage is happening in the mouth of the cow, and the cow belongs to the damager. We don't say it's in the domain of the damager. We say, no, it's in the domain of the damaged. Di Kachatzer Amazak Dami.
That would render meaningless to
the Gemara will ask that question. Because if you're going to tell me that the mouth of the cow is already the domain of the damager, so then the owner of the dog can say, listen, my dog is my area. My boy is riftach bepuma de kalbay. Why was your bread in my dog's mouth? Well, when you trespassed into my domain. So I don't need to pay because you trespassed into my domain. Because we had this question. Pipara, we know the law is that you have to pay for the damage of your cow eating. The mouth of your cow, kichatzer anizak tami, is that the domain of the damaged? Or kichatzer amazak tami? Or is that the domain of the damager? So now, you have Fred's question. Iyamart, if you're going to say kichatzer amazak tami, that the mouth of the cow is the domain of the damager, so shein dechiyev rachman eichim ishkachasla. When did Hashem ever say that you're responsible for the mouth of the animal eating? Wherever it eats, by definition, it's already the domain of the damager, and it's not stay acher, it's not the field of others. Amar Rav Mari Brej Rav Kahana. Rav Mari, the son of Rav Kahana, answered, I'll tell you the definition of the Torah of a tooth that damages is kegon shenischacha bekosel ha'na'asa. It's where an animal rubs itself against a wall because it has a scratch on its back. So it has a desire to rub itself against the wall and it knocks the wall over. That would be the domain of the damaged. Or tinfa peiros la'na'asa. It has a lot of excrement and it has to get rid of the excrement because it's carrying this load. It doesn't like it. So to alleviate itself, it releases the excrement and it drops it on top of my hay or my wheat or my fruits, and it ruins my fruits. So it never went into its mouth. And since it didn't go into its mouth, That's why it's not in the domain of the damager, it's in the domain of the damage. So what's the halacha? Do we have such an expansive view of damager to say that even the mouth of the damager is the domain of the damager? We say, no, the damager in the courtyard of Gabriel is in the domain of the damage and has to pay. So Maskefla Marzutra. So Marzutra said, how could you think that the Torah's definition of damage of the Torah's definition of Shein is only an animal rubbing against the wall or only an animal dropping excrement? Fabina, but look at the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, Kasher Yevaira Golala Tumo, as someone would consume that which can be eaten till its very, very end. And as we said earlier, that means Mechlaya Karna, Daf Gimel, that the Shein, you're responsible for tooth when it destroys the principle. When it knocked over a wall, it's not destroying the principle. When it drops a bunch of excrement, it's not destroying the principle of Aleka. So Ravina said, I'll tell you. No, you can have knocking over a wall also destroying the principle and the meaning of the pasuk of the tooth consuming fully. When the wall has a fancy statue etched into it, and the animal comes and rubs itself against the wall, and by rubbing against the wall, it rubs out that statue. D'shaf tzalmi, it rubbed out the statue that's in the wall. Or Rav Ashi said, I'll give you another explanation. D'pasa psui, where the animal rolls on top of a bunch of wheat. So by rolling over the wheat, because it was hot, it wanted to feel better, it crushed all the wheat. So there, the principle, the wheat, is destroyed, even though it never went into the animal's mouth. So we're left still with this question. Is the animal's mouth considered the domain of the damager, or is it the domain of the damaged?
Wouldn't
yeah.
That be regal? Wouldn't that be considered regal if he rolls over it?
No, because it's for its benefit, right?
Because
he gets pleasure, he wants it, so that would be considered shame. So Tashma, let's try to prove this question, whether the mouth of the damager is a separate domain. We learned in a Mishnah in Masechet Sanhedrin, Shisabo es hakelev, if a man sicks a dog against his friend, or Shisabo es hanachash, or he sicked a snake against his friend, and that snake or dog killed the friend, Potter, he's not going to be put to death for murder, because he only caused the damage. It's called grama. It's not considered Ritzicha, an act of murder. So the Gemara asks, Man Potter, who is the one who is exempt? Presumably, Mishase Potter, the one who sicked up the dog, is exempt. But Chayev Balakela, but if it was damage and not murder, the owner of the dog would have to pay for the damages that his dog caused. Now, that his dog, made. If you're going to say that the mouth of an animal is already the domain of the damager, let the owner of the dog say, my boy, what was your hand doing in the mouth of my dog? Your hand is in the domain of mine. It's in the domain of the damager. So the Gemara says, no, Ema, that's not a proof. You can read that Mishnah, maybe. Pater af Mishasa. The Mishnah is saying, even the one who incites the dog is exempt. And certainly the owner of the dog is exempt, because what's the hand doing in his domain? Ibai is saying, alternatively, you can say that that case, when we inferred that the owner of the dog would be responsible, so don't you see that the mouth of a dog is not considered the domain of the damager? Maybe there it didn't even go into the mouth. What happened was that the dog took his teeth out, and with his tooth protruding out, he scratched the victim. So the victim's hand never went into the mouth of the dog. It never went into the domain of the damager. It was still outside. So we still have this question. Is the mouth of a cow or the mouth of a dog the domain of the damager, or is that also the domain of the damaged? Tashma, come and hear a proof. The end of that Mishnah. Hishech bo'es hanachash. But if the fellow did more than incite the snake against the victim, he took the victim and he literally put the snake on the victim. So then Rabbi Yehuda says that's already murder. Chachamim pochim. Chachamim say that's also exempt. It's also just incitement. Rabbi Yaakov explained, Kishatim tzilomar, when you try to be precise, you'll find the following. Rabbi Yehuda holds that the poison, the venom of a snake, is already between its teeth. It's not an action of the snake to release the poison. It's already there. So once you put the snake on someone, you're literally, it's like putting a knife on that person. That's murder. Therefore, it's the equivalent of hitting someone with a snake, was hitting someone with a knife. V'nachash patur, the snake itself would not be stoned to death as a killer because it didn't do an action at all. The person who handled the snake is the killer. However, according to the sages who say that the person is not going to be put to death for having put a snake on someone else, eres nachash me'atzmo meki. Even when the snake bites and gets its venom out, it has to ignite itself. It has to pull out the venom. So therefore, lefichach nachash beskila, the killer here is the snake. The snake is going to be stoned to death like an animal that kills. However, umakish patur, the person who put the snake on the person, he's just an insider. He's not put to death. Now, if you're going to say that the mouth of an animal is already the domain of the damager, so lamely, even in the last case, he should be able to say, the owner of the snake should be able to say, my boy, what's your hand doing inside of the snake? Your hand is already in my domain, and therefore I'm exempt. So Gemara says, Le'inyan k'tal lo aminu. We certainly would never say that in regards to the laws of death, that an animal that kills has to be put to death, or a person who murders is to be put to death, that the mouth of an animal is already the domain of the damager and exempt. That we wouldn't say. When we not tamra, how do I know that? We can only say it perhaps in regards to the laws of pain. Maybe in regards to pain, you don't pay for what's in the mouth of your animal. But in regards to death, that your animal would be put to death for having killed someone, that you certainly put the animal to death. We know that from a b'raisa. The time we looked in a b'raisa, ha'nichnas l'chatzer balabai shelo b'rishus, if I walk into the domain of somebody else without permission, I'm a trespasser. U'negharo shorosh shel balabayis, and chas v'shalom, the ox of that person damages the trespasser. U'mason, the trespasser dies. Hashor b'skila, the ox that gored would be stoned to death. However, Ubalim, but the owner of the ox, Pturim minakofer, they don't have to pay any money for their animal killing someone. Normally, when their animal kills someone, they need to pay kofer, they need to pay an atonement payment, but here not. So, Balim, Pturim minakofer, my time, why would the owner of the ox not have to pay kofer? Tamarle, because the owner of the ox can say, Birshusi, my bais, what were you doing in my property? You're the trespasser. However, so why don't we do the same with the ox? Shoronami, lemele, Birshusi. Nebele, my boy, Spirshusi, why, in regards to the ox, why is the ox stoned to death? Let the owner of the ox be able to say, what were you doing in my property? You were trespassing. You had no right to be in my property. Ella, but rather, Linyan K'tala lo Amrina, when we talk about matters of human life, we talk about someone being killed and having to punish the animal for killing, then we don't say, what were you doing in my property? So now the Gemara goes on and introduces an idea which is really revolutionary and doesn't seem to be accepted at all. Hanu easy to vei tarbu. There were these goats in the family of tarbu. Tavu mafsu deli Rav Yosef. They used to eat the fields of Rav Yosef and ruin his property. Amalei la Abaye. So Rav Yosef told the student Abaye, zil emu l'marad l'tznilnu. Go tell their owners that they need to be protecting them and guarding them so that they shouldn't be damaging my stuff. Amalei so Abaye said, Amai Ezel, why should I go? If I go, they would tell me, you should put up a fence to protect your stuff from getting eaten. Why should we protect the damager? You, the damage, should protect your stuff. The Gemara says, and if we're going to say that a person has to always protect his stuff from being damaged, so again, Fred's question, where would you ever have a person responsible for the tooth? Kishachatra. Where he put up the fence, and even so, the animal snuck underneath the fence. Inami, where he put up the fence, and Nafel Gudabalila, it fell down at night, so he didn't have a chance to repair it. Machas Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef used to say in public, V'yitema Rabba, some say it was Rabbi used to say it, the Sulkim Le'ela, those who go from Babel to the land of Israel, Denachim Lesata, and those who go from the land of Israel down to Babel, you should know the following. Hanu'izi Deshuka, the goats of the slaughterers that are waiting to be slaughtered, the mafsidi, if now they're eating stuff that belongs to others, masvina b'maraya treyot lasa zimna, we warn their owners two or three times, you better stop this behavior of your goats. It's ice, if they listen, good. You know, if they don't listen, aminalu, we tell the butcher, tiv, amasachta v'kabel zuzach, sit back in your store, and get the money from the meat of the goats, because since they are causing damage, we're going to slaughter them a day early to stop the damage that they're causing. Thank you.